The churches that were built during the medieval period were designed to just feel holy. So when you walked into a medieval cathedral, it drew your eyes up to God. Every line, every window was designed to create in you a sense of awe and wonder. Stained glass windows were designed to show you unworldly pictures, to teach you theology, to cover you in bright colors that no peasant had as part of their daily life. The sun shining through that glass, can you imagine what that looked like to someone at that time? Those beautiful jewel colors. It looked like they were being painted with a dream. And some modern churches are built that same way. The air is hushed. The atmosphere is heavy. It's all designed to make you feel like you are in the presence of something. To make you feel like you are there with the holy. But what is this holy? What is this holy thing? And how do you know when it's actually there? How do you know when it's not just a trick of the way the building is built? Or just a feeling of smallness in the presence of something very large? Holy means different things to different people. And for one person, that definition can change over the course of your life. For some people, that same medieval cathedral would not feel holy at all. It would feel cold and empty and maybe even a little frightening. Holy can't be pinned down. Holy is organic. Holy flows. If I had tried to put it in words 15 years ago, I would have started by saying that holy is anything that makes you feel that you are in the presence of something that needs to be revered and honored. That you're in the presence of anything that makes you feel by seeing it that you are seeing the sublime in form or nature. If I see a thing and that thing makes me strive to be a better person just by being exposed to it, then I am in the presence of the holy and the sacred. And that definition does work. It's a perfectly good definition. When you go out and you see a mountain stream and it touches something in your chest and you almost can't breathe because it is so beautiful, you're in the presence of the holy. When you see your child for the first time and you can't breathe because you love them so much, you're in the presence of the holy. So that's a good definition. It's a good start. In the footnote to Howl, which we just heard read, Allen Ginsberg, who is not known for his subtlety, he shouts, and when he delivers this, he screams it, that everything is holy, and not just holy, but equally holy. The beggar and the angel, the musician, the demon, the cities and mercy and charity and working and slacking, all are sacred. These things, he says, are holy because they exist. And when I first saw him in a video performing this, that was the point where I went, oh, you've smoked a bit too much. I don't know what to do with this. I don't know what to do with this. It's holy just because it's there. Wait a minute. Is he saying that holy isn't extraordinary? That it isn't a rare object worth veneration? I don't know what to do with this. Just when I thought I had it, he turned me around He confused me. I don't think a pop can on the sidewalk is holy. And I had to step back and say, what do I do with this thing that he has said? Ginsburg is saying that everything should draw us to veneration. All of it, the good, the bad, the ugly, the stained. He agrees with my simple definition of holy, but says that if we are not drawn to reverence and transformation by everything that we see, the problem is that we aren't looking. It reminds me of Peter Mayer's gentle song, Holy Now. When Mayer says, wine from water is not so small, but an even better magic trick is that anything is here at all. So the challenging thing becomes not to look for miracles, but finding where there isn't one. Now that sounds good, theoretically. And I was struggling with this. I thought, that sounds great. That sounds amazingly Unitarian Universalist, but what does that mean? What does that mean when I'm walking through a world that is ugly at times? I started thinking about the worst things, the bad things, and then the terrible things. And I convinced myself for a minute, just for a minute, that I had an argument. Car accidents aren't holy. The Holocaust isn't sacred. It's ugly. And I thought I had Ginsburg. I thought I had it. And I started to look at history, how our Unitarian ancestors looked at this. William Ellery Channing was a UU minister in 1828, and he preached on the nature of God. He had an interesting idea. He said, we discover the divine by looking at ourselves, at our own souls. He wrote, the idea of God, sublime and awful as it is the idea of our own spiritual nature, purified and enlarged to infinity. It wasn't about seeing what the divine did in the world. Channing wrote, the universe, I know the universe is full of God. The effects and signs of God's power, wisdom, and goodness are apparent through the whole of creation. But apparent to what? Not to the outward eye, but to the kindred mind, which interprets the universe by itself. We see God around us. We see the divine, we would say now. We see the divine as we can envision it. The great spirit of humanity. The great spirit of a God. Of a goddess. We see God because it dwells inside us. It is by a kindred wisdom that we discern its wisdom in its works. So Channing and Ginsburg, well, they were a little bit aligned against my position. They agree that holiness is everywhere, but not because it's all good by nature. We see holiness because we are holy, because we are reflecting the divine in our perception. Now, I don't know how many of you remember the first time you drove somewhere alone. I remember getting in that car and turning on that radio for the first time with nobody in that other seat. And I remember the way the city unwound all around me as I went by. I remember how the air smelled and what the light looked like coming through the windshield. It looked a light, like light through a cathedral window. That 1978 Monte Carlo felt holy. It was my church in that moment. It was a sacred moment. But if you had looked at that car, that miserable car, covered in rust, guzzling gas, smelling like old milk, There was nothing holy or sacred about that car. But it was my church in that moment. Maybe you were never born again in a Monte Carlo. Maybe for you it was a Volkswagen bus. Or maybe you didn't get any Volkswagen salvation. Maybe for you, that stained glass showed up the first time you were brave enough to order a plate of sushi. Something you had not seen before, but wanted to try. And you suddenly realized that you had agency in the world. That you could do different things that your parents hadn't done. Maybe it was when you saw your first mountain. Maybe it was when you walked in the mud. The what doesn't matter, because it was you that brought the divine, not the car, not the mud. And so I started to think about the Holocaust again. In 1946, there was a Jewish writer named Zevi Kollatz, and he wrote a piece that I highly recommend you read. Yosel Rakoff Talks to God. Read it when you have time to think about it. It's a few pages long. Everett Howe summarized it better than I ever could when he said, "The story is the form of an imaginary note hidden in a bottle found in the rubble of the Warsaw ghetto. And this imaginary note is written by a Jewish freedom fighter who knows he's about to die. It will make you feel like you've been punched." He talks about his friends and his family dying. He talks about the Germans he's killed. He talks about knowing that he isn't going to see the sun again as he watches it go down. He talks about his belief in God, but more than that, he talks about his argument with God, which he is currently in the middle of his complaint to a God who would permit such destruction. Because in Kollatz's story, belief in God isn't the point. For his narrator, the holy lies in his refusal to let go of his identity, in his traditions, in his history. "I love God," the narrator says, "but I love his Torah more." He found the sacred in the middle of horror, in the continuity of his community, in the history of his people. Sometimes holiness is a silver thread in a dark, dark world. Sometimes holiness is knowing that it's bad, but that there may be hope again. At the end of the story, the hero says, "I die at peace, but I am not pacified. Conquered and beaten, but I am not enslaved. Bitter, but not disappointed. A believer, not a supplicant. A lover of God, but not a blind amen sayer. I die myself." Holiness is the ability to become more whole than it is right now. Holiness is agency. Holiness is seeing the ugly and still having faith that there is hope for the future. Holiness is seeing that the sacred remains, even though it isn't visible right this minute. Holiness is being furious that the highest order of things, the divine spirit of God or life or humanity, is letting something terrible happen. But still believing that we are called by nature to the upward, the positive, and the kind. Holiness is not being destroyed when the worst is in front of you. It's a message that I needed to find this week as I watched the confirmation hearings unfold for our Supreme Court justice. The sacred seemed pretty invisible. no matter which side of this you were on. For one side, some are afraid we've placed a rapist who've never tried a case on the highest court of our land, making the law a parody. For the other side, they see men accused without any type of proof years after what happened. Both sides are afraid and angry. Some have no issue with the man, but are frightened by the violence of feeling. Some are triggered by memories of their own assault or the memories of harm to loved ones. Some don't know of anybody who was assaulted and are scared to death that that means it's because nobody ever told them. Where is holiness right now? How do we see the sacred when our country seems poised on the brink of explosion? How do you know when holy is all around you? All I can say is this: look around you. Holiness isn't outside. You carry it with you. You bring it to the world. The idea of God, sublime and awful as it is the idea of our own spiritual nature, purified and enlarged to infinity. We aren't waiting for the holiness. We are the holiness. We are the wall which protects against oblivion by the darkness. We are here, and so holiness is here. And we have a job to do. We have one job to do. We have to bring that holiness to anyone surrounded by the darkness. We have to bring it to anyone who's lost hope. There is hope because our human hands are holding on to it. We want a world with justice, so we are going to create one. We're not going to wait to have it created for us. We want a world with beauty, so we are going to protect it. We are going to plant it. We are going to grow it. We are going to make it beautiful. We want a world with love, so we are going to find ways to love one another. We want a world at peace, so we are going to rise up and hold on until that peace is found. We want a world with hope, so we are going to start hoping. And we are not going to let that hope die. We are never turning back. We are never going to let the darkness win. Because we exist, there is holiness. Where we are is the home of the sacred. We are going to make the world our church, justice our hymn, because the holy is our birthright, and we are the answer we are looking for. So open up the stained glass windows of your eyes and your mind, because everything is holy now, and Ginsberg was right. And we have so much work to do. Amen.